Good morning. This is a difficult reading today. It's about perfection. And you hear the Gita and it says one out of a thousand, one out of another thousand, that's one out of a million. And you think, oh my God. So I've seen this passage of Jesus, Mark or Matthew 5, and I thought, well, maybe next lifetime Jesus could do it, but you know, he is God, et cetera, et cetera. So how can we possibly ever come near standing up to that sort of abuse from people? But if we continue to read and read more closely what Swami's talking about, he's not talking about taking our little ego and making it gigantic, making our ego God, and then being able to put up with abuse. He's talking about shrinking the ego entirely. Christ was able to do this because he saw the world as a movie, and he saw the people who were abusing him as a part of him. They were not separated from him. They were deluded, so he could easily pray for them because these people were just in delusion, and sooner or later it would become clear to them. So that gives us the project of how to get rid of our egos. That's the basic concept. And I was reminded of a story of a sadhu in India. And he's wandering, you know, one of the naked Nagu sadhus, wandering through a village, and the kids see him and they think, well, here's a crazy man. So they grab a bunch of rocks and start throwing it at the sadhu. And they hit him and he falls down unconscious. And after several hours, some of his disciples come and find him, and they say, Master, they wake him up, bring him water, and they say, Master, are you all right? Do you know who we are? And the sadhu says, yes, the one who was throwing rocks at me is the one who is taking care of me now. So that's the secret for us. Begin to see the sameness in everything. Begin to feel that God exists in everyone. And another important aspect of this is everything that comes to us is ours. We see something and we shrink away from it. We try and avoid it. The only way to get through it is to stand up to it and put out more energy than it has coming at you. Because you'll never get away from it. Sooner or later, whatever you're trying to avoid will come and find you. I had some experiences in India. First time I went was with the pilgrimage that Asha and David lead. And India, I'd never been to a third world country. I'd never been out of the country, actually. And India is a hard experience if you've never been there. There's so much poverty, and life and death is acted out right in front of you on the street. It's just an amazing experience. We hide everything here, but nothing is hidden in India. And so after that first trip there, I had a heck of a lot of stuff that I had to process. And the most difficult city for me was Varanasi, because the whole feeling in Varanasi is just divine. You can just feel God every step. But it was also smoggy and dirty and crowded and poverty. And it was just, the two things just tore at my heart. And so I processed that as best I could for a couple of years, and then I got a chance to go back to India 2 years later. And so we're in Varanasi again, and I'm walking down the street with all the other Gurubhais, and there's, I don't know, 40-some-odd of them, because there was quite a crew. And it's hot, and this time I'd worn my hat, which I finally figured that one out. And there's beggars everywhere. They won't leave you alone, and you can't stop to give the beggars anything. Because if you do, then they'll just trap your whole group and you'll never get away from them. So we're walking along, and I'm kind of near the front because I've been here before. And one of the beggars is a leper, and he's got this much of a hand. He's just got this stump. And I'm ignoring him, and he finally just gets pushed out of shape and hits me in the face with his hand. And I feel it wet, and I think, I wonder if you get leprosy from beggar's stumps. And I thought, well, okay, God, this is it. And so I thought, all right, I'm just going to experience this. So I stopped and I turned around and I looked back the way we'd come just to experience the whole thing, just to actually own it and say, okay, hit me with your best shot. What do you got out there? And I looked and there's all this, the crowd and the noise and the heat. And then in that moment, everything disappeared. The sound stopped. Everything turned white. And this great joy came over me. And the words came, everything is perfect just as it is. And so I had that experience for, I don't know, minutes. It was hard to tell. I was just timeless. Could have gone on for a long, long time. And then all of a sudden everything was back, and it was the noise and the smell and the beggars and all of the rest of it. But somehow or other, I knew that it wasn't true. This was just everyone's karma was perfect for them. They were there to learn from what they had. And it was much more a movie for me after that. And I really enjoyed India from that time on. So that leaves us with how do we actually make progress. And one thing that we can look to is people who are further along on the path than we are. And so the great example for us is Swami Kriyananda. And there is an outside chance that he has been without reference to his ego since the 1950s. I haven't been able to actually ascertain that. But he is operating at a totally different level. I've spoken with people that have been around him for 40 years, and they tell me he has not changed. Now, that's not my experience, because I've been here for a lot less time, and I grow, and I see him change. So all I'm doing is taking my personality and projecting it onto him and saying, well, he's getting better. Well, that's not true. Swami, we had a lawsuit here, I don't know, 10 years ago or so. And it was a really messy one, and we were in all the papers, and Ananda was getting hammered, and it was just really unpleasant for months. And Swami is one of the defendants in Ananda, and so I felt that, you know, dharmically I should go and spend some time in the courthouse because we wanted to show support. So one day I went down, I had my suit on, et cetera, et cetera. And we were being vilified as the terrible group that we are. And, you know, after 3 hours of this, I was pretty ragged. And then it was noontime. I thought, well, I'm going to get up and leave this. This is too much for me. And I stood up, and Swami was coming out because it was lunch, and he was one of the defendants. And he came up, put a hand on my shoulder, and says, thanks for coming, Rick. And I looked at him, and he wasn't touched at all. It was just like, you know, he's going to lunch somewhere. It was not a problem. I thought, isn't that amazing? And the real kicker of this whole process is toward the end of the whole lawsuit thing, he either prayed or had a meditation with Babaji. And he said, Babaji, how come you're letting them do this to Ananda and to me? And Babaji said, they're all my children. Meaning that whatever is happening is for the right reason. And at some point, Swami said, the fact that everything has fallen and, you know, come against us is an indication Divine Mother wants this to happen. And so it's for us to rise. And I know for many people in Ananda, that's when we actually became adults. We actually grew up. We took responsibility for Ananda being its own entity and representing Master and taking Yogananda's teachings forward. So that still leaves us with how do we move forward? And the several of the things I've been working with the last couple of weeks are either a mantra or something running constantly in your mind. And what I found works best is a feeling tone. Because if it gets into thought, then thought turns into just mental gibberish and goes away. But if you can feel love, if you can feel joy, calmness, peace, pick one of those that speaks to you and that you can actually experience it and do it every moment. And then when you begin to feel that thing fade, come back to it. That would be a great one to keep you present, because being present is one of the most important aspects of the spiritual path. And then another one is practice the presence of God. And we've heard that for years, and I've done it variously. But I had another chance to think about it recently. And I realized that we are constantly telling ourselves something. Our minds are constantly in some sort of a conversation. If you don't believe it, just spend a few seconds and take a look. You're feeding back what's going on in your head, but you're feeding it back to your ego. So now put God in there and feed back all the stuff that comes to you to God. And then just have God as your friend. Have God with you. Just make him part of your moment-to-moment experience. Give that one a try. I think that that will greatly help. And one last thing that has worked is something I read from Swami Kriyananda a couple of weeks ago. And he said, God doesn't have a body. God is the universal being. So we need to be God's body and heart. And so we want to invite God into ourselves and love people for God. And I really like that one. I thought, well, no, that's definitely worth trying out. And so a couple of days ago, I was sitting there in a big traffic jam and watching people just drive towards me. And, you know, every imaginable face and emotion was being shown. And as they would come towards me, I would just try and give them a certain amount of love. And I would look at them and I'd actually see where they were and what they were doing. And I realized that every single one of them was doing their best to find joy and to get out of pain. Even when they were slamming on their brakes and yelling at each other, it was the most amazing thing. So that's the secret. If you can begin to change where you're coming from and how you're seeing the world, and grab hold of that feeling and make God your central feeling. God bless.
A lot of wisdom there in 10 minutes. I have had the opportunity and really privilege over these last few weeks to be teaching both a course about the chakras here with my friend Connie Hernandez, and at the same time teaching our Meditation 2 class, which is a class that really helps us take the next step towards understanding. Is that better? Understanding that everything is energy, and trying to begin to realize the control then that we have over who we are, how we live, what we draw into our lives, how we actually go about transforming ourselves from, as Chidambar was saying, a place of ego consciousness to a place of soul consciousness. And then I was to be giving Sunday service this morning, and here was this reading about perfection. And even in the reading tells us to try and practice this when there's negativity, any type of negative energy coming our way. And I thought, well, that would be very hard. I felt just like Chidambar did. You really come up against the notion of, what does it mean to be perfect? What is the Bible trying to tell us? But then I realized that the truth is that this perfection, which is realizing our superconscious self, our oneness with all that is just as difficult in everyday life for most of us. Our fourth chakra class, which was just Wednesday night, which was perfectly timed for this, as was the last class of Meditation 2, was focusing on the third chakra. For those of you who may not know what this is, the chakras are basically little vortices of energy that live in a spiritual spine called the astral spine, right at our core. They carry in them the blueprint for all of who we are, all of how we will be. And they also carry, because we are who and how we are, blocked energy. They have ways of shutting down energy that is trying to come in and rise up our spine and allow us to live superconsciously, remembering who we are. Again, that we're one with the divine. But because of what's called karma and many lives of magnetizing, difficult energy, having been who we were in previous lives, and I know I'm flying through many huge topics here, but I'm going to bring this back and make it all make sense around our path to perfection. These chakras sometimes disallow this energy from coming in and smoothly flowing up our spine and resting here at the point between the eyebrows, at what is called the center of Christ consciousness, that place where we remember our true nature and our true self. So most of us live out of touch with those, that reality in everyday life. And in the chakra class, we're looking at ways to release the blocks, to open up these gates, if you will, so that energy can just flow through in a positive, upward, expansive direction, rather than getting blocked and flowing out into the world. So last week was the third chakra, and I was listening to some tapes that Swami Kriyananda had recorded many years ago when he taught a 5-day class on the chakras. And he said about this chakra, he said, "This is very hard. This is almost impossible for the human mind to get. This is the chakra, the fire chakra, fiery determination, power, absolutely committing ourselves now to take all of this energy and purify it in fire and turn it from anything of material substance to pure energy." Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, which are the which is the Hindu Bible, if you will, the teachings of Krishna, a divine manifestation on earth in physical form, as was Jesus, as was Moses or Buddha, goes into battle with a student whose name is Arjuna. Arjuna, in the Bible, who's asking Krishna, who is the divine, and who's driving his chariot for him right down the middle of this battlefield, represents our third chakra. He is fiery self-control. He is determination. He is willpower in this story. And the story, just as a sentence or two, for those of you who may not know, is really about the challenge that all of us are up against, just what Chidambar was talking about how do we begin to leave behind all of these downward-pulling energies, all of the habits that we've developed, all of the ways that we've been taught to live out in the world, to live in terms of what's coming in to make us feel whole, to make us feel happy, to bring us pleasure. And all of our lives, we've been taught, literally from the moment the egg and sperm join, from the minute there is a flash of light at the medulla that calls to the next soul to enter this body, our energy is from that instant focused down and out. And the purpose of this life is to learn again how to draw that energy in, transform it, and leave behind our ego consciousness and enter soul consciousness, super consciousness. So what Swamiji says, as he's looking at this third chakra and telling us this is hard, he said, because what do we know of this? What do most of us know? We hear all of these words, even what Chidambaran has said until now, even what I've said. What does it mean to imagine being one with all that is? What does it mean when we hear words that say any notion we have of being separate from each other or from anything in the world is an illusion? These are all wonderful teachings, but to us, it feels like somebody's sitting down and saying to us, if you do this right now, if you actually sit in meditation, if you pray, if you carry a mantra or one of those great attributes with you that Chidambaran was referring to, guess what happens? You lose your breath. You forget that you're an individual. You're going to become part of all that is. You lose your individuality. I mean, quite honestly, it's terrifying. And Swamiji spoke right to that. And he spoke to the absolute importance right now in this chakra or in this reading with this fire of purification to be willing and able to say, we may not know what any of that really means. I don't know how many of us in this room have had that experience of being one with all that is. We've heard it. It's something that draws us because our soul remembers and our soul's longing for something other than what we're living with right now. But we don't really know what it's going to feel like. When Ramakrishna was with his disciple, Vivekananda, one of the first Eastern saints to ever come and teach in the West, a very great man. And he was about to put his finger on the point between his eyebrows and take him into samadhi. Vivekananda stopped him. And he said, but wait, I have to support my wife. Here was Vivekananda, who was actually expressing the incredible fear of leaving what he knew right now and being willing to do what he needed to do, even to receive it from his teacher, to be given that gift of what we all say we want. In our language, we can say we want to know a deep sense of inner peace. We want to know true love. We can talk about it in much more simple language. But here was Ramakrishna, and Vivekananda stopped him. Now, of course, Ramakrishna went on anyway, touched him at the point between the eyebrows, and gave him this experience of divine bliss. But it's not easy. It's not easy to say yes to all of this. Here is Arjuna, who represents us, finite understanding of things, and here's Krishna. And Arjuna is riding in this chariot, making an impassioned plea to Krishna to not have to fight the battle, to not have to do away with, in the story, his cousins, but what we know are those qualities in us that keep us bound to the ego, our desire to have more things, to be sure we'll find our happiness in it, to find the perfect partner, be sure we'll find our happiness there, to put all of our energy into making our businesses go well, even if it means maybe behaving in less than ethical ways at times. Whatever it is, maybe if we bring it to our level because we happen to be the one in a thousand, that's why all of us are here. We're all, everybody in this room is seeking something other than what they know in their life. So even if we speak about us, what happens on the nights when friends say, you know, I know you were going to go to chant tonight or to Sunday service or to a class, but let's just go out for dinner. Let's have a nice dinner or let's go watch a movie. How many times do we get sidetracked from coming back and back and back to what our true purpose in life is? And here is Arjuna, who's saying, I don't want to do it. He says, it's not right for me to have to take this type of action. I am going to sit here and I will take no action. I'll be sweet. I won't hurt anybody. I don't want to hurt my cousins over here. I don't want to do any harm in the world. Let me just sit here. And in the way that so many of us do on our path, in that moment, he's mistaking inaction for peace. He's saying, if I don't have to act out, if I don't have to take any powerful action, if I don't have to kill anybody, even in this righteous war, then I will just be at peace. Really missing that even to be at peace requires enormous action and enormous power on our part. What do we say every Sunday when we start service? The voice of God calls us to awaken him. How will he find us? And we all respond with great energy, awake and ready. We're not just saying that. Yogananda came and he had people all over the world saying, I am awake and ready. I am awake and ready. All of these superconscious living exercises that we teach. I am positive, energetic, enthusiastic, because that's exactly what it takes to be able to step onto this path and to make claim, even putting one foot in front of another, which is really all any of us can do, is with great honesty and whatever clarity we can bring to it, ask ourselves, where are we right now on this path? And what will be our next step? And that's not easy. I remember one time years ago, I was talking to Asha. I was in a battle with a couple of the staff people at that time. I wasn't, in that moment, part of the staff here at the church. And I said to her in a moment, I'm going to tell you this about myself, but I don't want you to tell them. Of course, implying that they would use it against me. And she looked at me and she said to me, Shanti, don't you think they already know? And of course, in that moment, I just saw it. Of course, other people can see where we are. Sometimes we just can't. But to take a spiritual inventory, to ask ourselves, where am I now? And what will be my next step? And then to take it with faith, to have the courage that our affirmation talked about today. None of this can happen. None of, even what Chidambar outlined for us can happen until we come at this with tremendous faith, that is, believing in something that we can't see. And how do we develop that? We do that by all the things Chidambar mentioned, by coming to service, by coming to classes, by chanting, by putting ourselves as often as we can in a position for faith and grace to descend, because those are things that happen outside of ourselves until we have an experience that proves what was a belief, then it becomes faith, and then we can move forward. But we must have courage. We can't do it. Asha's been talking to us over these last weeks about, of course, it's been Easter, and she talked about the enormous courage that it took for Christ to walk down that road knowing that he was going to be crucified. He didn't hold back. He didn't try and talk Pontius Pilate out of crucifying him. He walked right into what was his karma, although really he didn't have karma, what was the way for him that he knew the right way to walk back into that light, into that experience of the divine. Now we say we want to do it. We have to find our courage in different ways. We're not in that way being crucified, but we're being crucified almost every day, every time we turn our back on what is a step in that direction that will help us remember and know for sure who we are. And yes, it takes faith. And yes, it takes courage. Yes, we have to show up moment after moment. And sometime we need to take those steps even before we know exactly what the outcome's going to be. There's another wonderful story of Shankaracharya on the side of a river, perhaps you've all heard it, a big rushing river, and his disciple walks up to the river. And with just a quiet smile, just a look, he says to his disciple, "Come." And the disciple, without a thought, steps right into the river. And as he puts his foot on the water, a lotus leaf appears, and it supports him on the water. And as his foot steps down again, another lotus leaf appears. He had no idea that his guru was able to manifest lotus leaves. That's not what he said. "I'll take this step because I know that he's going to put a leaf there that I'll be able to stand on." But he believed, he had faith, and he knew that his guru would be there in some way if he was calling him, that whatever was about to happen in that river, whatever was about to happen in that river, was a step back towards that place in himself that is the divine, that place where we're all headed. And Krishna wound up saying to Arjuna, "Arjuna, every person here, everything that matters in life depends on you right now, depends on you having the courage, finding the conviction, having the faith of denouncing and killing all that you know to be wrong, all of the behavior, of course, again, being acted out in human form, everything that you know to be wrong, you must go forward and fight." He didn't say to him, "Stop and think about it, maybe." It can't be like that. Yogananda tells a story of painting with the monks and the nuns one time. And the monks were painting and thinking and painting this building. He said, "I walked in and there was one of the nuns painting like this with all the energy." He said, "That's what we need to do. That's how we have to go after what we want. That's how we take our next step on this path to perfection." As Chidambar said, it can't happen out here. It won't happen. You can't solve a problem that's at the level of consciousness with the ego. We've got to find a way. We have to step into that river. We have to have that courage. We have to keep showing up, knowing that as soon as we're willing to take a step into the river, that God himself will be there to save us. And as we keep stepping into whatever the river is that's presenting itself in our life in that moment, we just move that much closer to God. And before we know it, we've walked across the river and we're bowing at our guru's feet. Swami said in that talk, he said, "This is so huge what happens at the point of making this decision of moving forward or standing still, or even worse yet, losing ground on our spiritual journey." These are his words. He said, "It is more than Herculean. It is so huge." He said, "But the minute you start moving forward, the minute, then you begin to have those experiences that we all want, of the most tender, true love, of expanding happiness, of ever-increasing wisdom." He said, "Of a sense of soaring freedom." But more than anything, we step into that river and we know for sure that there's a divine presence that's there for us that will help us every step of the way.